Welcome to Pod to the Rescue.
Rescuing the dog is just the first step. We're here to help with everything that comes next. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Pod to the Rescue, episode number one.
Woohoo.
I'm Libby.
And I'm Emily.
And today we just wanted to talk a little bit about who we are, what we do, and why. So my name is Libby, and I'm a board member of SDR. I have been volunteering with SDR for how many years? This is going to be my fourth year.
Yep, fourth year.
And I'm the guardian of a crazy cattle dog who I rescued from SDR. She was a foster failure. I'm sure you'll be hearing a lot about Daisy on the podcast because she kind of exemplifies so much of what we do and why. But yeah, I fostered her for a year before I finally adopted her. Thank goodness. Can't imagine my life now without her. But she was my third or fourth foster for Summit.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
I think that's about right.
Yeah. And I started fostering because I was about 6 months out of separating from my ex-husband. And I lost our dog in the divorce. And I was like totally heartbroken about that. And so I thought, okay, you know, I need my own dog. I need to rescue my own dog. So I applied with Summit to adopt. And the dog I originally applied for wasn't a fit. But I said, well, you know, I'm interested in volunteering and fostering. So I started fostering. And over the years, I just got more and more involved. And here I am.
And here you are on the board and starting a podcast.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I'm Emily, and I am the founder of SDR. And let's see, I got involved in rescue. It was almost something that always happened in my life. Wherever I went, it seemed like someone would say, hey, can you rescue this dog? Like, I went on a trip, we drove to Mexico and we're camping on the beach. This was like 30 years ago, and some nice Canadians were rescuing dogs down there, and they were like, can you take one home? So we did.
Oh my gosh.
And smuggled her across the border. And I kept her, I ended up keeping her because that's a long story. But I just always seem to be in situations where dogs were being offered to me. I remember a boyfriend and I went down to the San Luis Valley and we're having lunch in a little cafe down there. And the owner of the cafe walked up to me and he said, hey, I've got four puppies. I'm going to go drown in a bag in the river. I'm not kidding you. And he's like, do you want one before I do it? And I was
oh my God.
Oh my God. And he's like, but so I went out and I looked at them and he's like, well, I'm keeping that one, but the other ones are available. And I was like, here's the deal. I'll take all the puppies. If you give me the one you're going to keep, just because it was someone who's going to drown a dog in the river is probably who wants. So we threw them all in the back of like my little extended cab and back up to Boulder, found them all homes.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway. Yeah. So I've always done rescue. It wasn't until the internet came around. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, I could actually really do rescue, like an intentional effort to rescue.
So how long ago was the puppies in the San Luis Valley?
I'd say it had to have been 25, 30 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. It was before my son was born. And those dogs, I knew most of the people who adopted them and they lived great lives and everybody loved them. They were great puppies.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. So fast forward to what, 2010? And you started SDR, right?
Yep. I think it was 2009.
Okay.
I had been involved in, I'd started a all breed rescue with a friend and then realized I didn't really like the purebred like specificity of like, is it purebred? Is it not purebred? So I started volunteering with another group that was a large dog rescue. And I realized that I'm a little bit too passionate about where the dogs go to be involved in someone else's rescue. So I was like, hey, I could just start my own pet finder account. And then it just snowballed and snowballed into like all of a sudden I was a 501c3, and then we had a Facebook page, and then we had a board of directors, and yeah, and then we had an education committee. Like, it just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wow. So, okay. So tell me more about that. You were a little too passionate about where the dogs ended up. How do you think that came about, and what was it about finding the perfect home that really made you click?
Oh, that's a good question. I remember when the dog that made me want to start SDR, I had found her on the internet. Someone had emailed me because they knew I was involved in a rescue and offered her to me. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, this is good. We can run her through the rescue that has like the money and the infrastructure, but I'll foster her. And she was an amazing dog. Her name was Hope. And I basically like risked all our lives driving to Utah to pick her up in a snowstorm.
Oh my gosh.
And made it home. And I fostered her for a couple of months, and she was incredible. And then when she got adopted, they just said, hey, she's adopted. So meet these folks like on the side of the interstate. And, you know, like I didn't have a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And, then I heard later she was returned, and it just broke my heart.
Mm.
I had to have like more hands-on involvement and make sure, like, I don't know who has her to this day, if she's even still alive. You know, I love dogs. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I can say that as a person who has fostered, it's knowing where your dogs are going, where your foster dogs are going, and knowing the people and getting to know them is such an important part of the process. Like, so many people tell me all the time, they say, oh my gosh, I could never foster. I get so attached. I don't know how you do it. But it's so much easier whenever we vet these homes, we get to know the owners.
Yeah. Potential problem. Owners. Yeah.
You know, yeah. I have no problem handing over my foster dog because I know that, okay, I've just been preparing her for this day, for this family.
Right. Right. Exactly. You're a bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've talked to other folks who foster for, you know, rescues or shelters, and they're always amazed that SDR does it the way we do,
and
you know, and that we keep in touch with our foster dogs once they are in their forever homes and things like that. So no, I feel that too.
Yep. And I think one thing we did learn over this snowballing of 13 years is we learned so much about how to set the dogs up. We learned so much about how to set dogs up to succeed in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when I started this, I didn't really know much about dogs at all. I was by no means an expert. I just thought I love dogs, and so I can save them through challenges and experiences and dogs being returned, dogs having issues. I think we've really learned, you know, the hard way how to avoid a lot of problems that occur in rescues. And our thoughts for this podcast, the reason you and I both were like, this is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
is because, you know, we see now, especially after this pandemic year, that we're hopefully coming to some sort of opening up from a year of shutdowns, is that, you know, so many people have started rescues and so many people have adopted dogs during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And what did we see? We read that 13 million people got dogs during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we have a lot of information and resources now so that people can tune in and be like, oh, you know, so this is what this is about. Like, how do I deal with this issue? Is this normal? So much of dog behavior we now understand and can normalize.
Mm-hmm.
That also give people like tricks and ideas, suggestions, and we'll also be interviewing lots of experts.
Right. Well, because so much of dog rescue is transitions, and when we have done so many of those over the years, we kind of have an eye for all of the problems that are going to crop up during those transitions. And there are so many transitions this year, from a dog being rescued to a dog being adopted to people, you know, kids are in school, they're home, they're back in school. People are working from home, they're back in the office, they're back working from home. And, you know, we're about to go through another big transition where life is going to change again.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think you're just right on that. We have a lot of experience helping our adopters through this kind of thing. So
yeah. Yeah. If we can help people with their transitions and understanding.
Absolutely. Okay. So speaking of everything that you've learned over the years, you became a dog trainer because of your work in rescue, right?
That is true. Yes.
Okay. So how did that come about?
Okay. So, you know, I did not really grow up with dogs. My mom was allergic. So when I started having dogs, rescuing dogs, I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. And I really thought love was all you needed. Mm-hmm. It took quite a few years of making mistakes to realize, like, you know, like, I don't think I know enough to keep doing this successfully.
Yeah.
And so I was lucky enough to do some training classes down in Denver, which kind of got me the bug. And then I went to the Karen Pryor Academy, which is a world-renowned dog training academy. And I became a certified professional dog trainer, I think about 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm really lucky because I spend every free moment and every available dollar going to conferences and listening to some of the premier experts in the world canine behavior. And I listen to dog, you know, canine behaviorists. And so what I'd like to do, what I've tried to do with SDR, is take this mountain of information I have obsessively collected and apply it just for your average person or your average foster, like, because most people don't want to spend every night going to bed listening to podcasts on canine behavior.
Most people,
or every walk I take, I'm like, throw on a podcast. But and so many of the podcasts that I listen to are amazing, but I feel like they're geared more towards trainers or people who are obsessed with behavior.
Right. And, or like the super dog sports world or things like that. And that's not your average dog home.
Right. People just want to know, how do I get this puppy to stop biting me? You know, am I supposed to be the boss of my dog? Or is this a relationship where there's give and take and I need to understand that they're a different species? And how can I meet their needs as the species that they are, which is very different from us since we're primates.
Right.
Not even primates. So, you know, just taking little gems and helping people understand. There is so much misinformation out there.
Oh, it's my
really
gosh.
Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorting through all the noise it's difficult. It can be maddening. It's also really disheartening whenever I truly believe, what is Brené Brown has a saying that, you know, life is better, or she says something like, Brené Brown says that life is better when she assumes that everyone is acting from their best intentions.
Yes.
And I know that dog guardians are always have their dog's best interests at heart. You know, they're acting with the best intentions. And it's so heartbreaking when you later realize that something you were doing was making it worse. You know, I've had that moment as a dog guardian, and I know that you've had those moments too.
Oh, yes.
So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm older. So when I was a youngster, you know, I turned on the TV and saw a guy alpha rolling his dog, and that was training. And one of my favorite dogs, I remember watching this TV show, and he recommended that you like kick them in the flank to get them to pay attention. And so, God, I had the sweetest, most amazing Newfoundland in the world, because when I wanted his attention for a long time, I would do this like gentle little sidekick onto his flank at his attention, because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. The guy on TV told me that, you know, this was a long time ago, but I did it, you know, and I had a choke collar, and I was like, I kind of thought of the choke collar as like the choke necklace. You know what I mean? I didn't think about like designed to choke my dog. I put so much pressure on their throat that they start to lose, you know, so and just so that it's uncomfortable and it causes pain. If it even works at all, it's because it causes pain and discomfort.
No, I remember that too, you know, all of this advice that was being thrown around. It's still thrown around, unfortunately, of how you need to be the alpha and alpha role and, you know, shake a can of pennies at your dog to stop them from counter surfing. But you know, when you know better, you do better. And here we are.
And I think what I always come back to for why we really don't use punishment in our training, or punishment being like force, fear, startle, pressure, as much as possible at SDR, is that all the research, like the jury is out now, that an animal that is treated like that is, you know, your chances increase tremendously that you're creating a fearful animal. And that you can also create an animal that has aggression. And
So this is, okay, so this is a really important point that we probably need to go into, which is that we do things a little bit differently at SDR from other rescues. And one of those big things we do is that we are, you know, we advocate for modern ethical training methods that are backed by science. So like you're saying, avoiding introducing force or punishment. And I know that we can get way into the weeds with all of this terminology, and that's not our intention. So we're going to try to keep it simple there. But tell me about your journey of moving SDR in that direction.
Yeah, when I started, education wasn't in any way part of the mission statement. But as we evolved and I learned more and more, and believe me, I tried things, you know, I thought, okay, if I alpha roll this dog, will it become less dog reactive? Because its life depends on it being adopted and not being reactive to dogs. But we now, you know, then I learned that that is the antithesis. So, you know, it's one of those, when you know better, you do better. And now that I know, you know, our whole goal is to rescue these dogs and then have them in foster care where they learn some skills and then adopt them into homes where they're successful for their entire lives.
And I think it's important to add here that isn't behavioral euthanasia one of the number one causes of death for dogs under 3 years of age?
It's actually the number one cause of death. According to the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior, the number one cause of death for dogs under the age of three are behavior problems. So, which makes sense, because you've got your cute little puppies and then they become adolescents. And then around 2 to 3, they hit social maturity. So, you know, people don't understand that what you get at 8 weeks is not necessarily what you're going to have at 18 months. There's a lot of work that gets your dog behaviorally healthy to age three.
And that's kind of around the time that we see dogs being surrendered to rescue, right? In your, I mean, I don't have exact statistics on this, but would you say in your experience, that's a common?
I say our most common is like 8 months to 18 months, which is like the pure teenager years where they no longer are paying attention, just like humans. You know, they are deep in adolescence.
Right.
And they are no longer responding to things that they used to respond to from us.
Yeah.
And they're willful and independent and highly emotional. So that's where you see your leash activity coming out. And, you know, potentially barking at strangers, biting the mailman. That's all, that all comes out between like 8 months to 18 months.
Right. When they're not a cute little fluffy puppy anymore.
Exactly. I mean, you can still have it come out later in life, but that's your, I'd say that's the higher odds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, all right. I know that you and I can get into the weeds of behavior for hours and hours and hours. Yes. And I know that we're going to come back to this topic in later episodes. So,
Okay, yeah. So cut it down.
We're going to table that, table that discussion for now. Okay. So that's one thing that's different about SDR is that we use modern ethical training methods when we're working with our fosters. We screen homes to make sure that they're not going to introduce punishment, pressure, those kinds of things, force into their relationships with their dogs while they're training. Rescuing dogs isn't the only part of SDR's mission. We also, education is important to us, like we've talked about. And also we spend a lot of our resources to support spay and neuter programs.
Yes. I do think that spay and neuter is one of the ways we can stop this cycle of, you know, still killing 2 to 3 million dogs a year in our shelters in America. That's just unacceptable.
I think you always, you like to say that we can't adopt our way out of the problem, right? Yeah. There just aren't enough adopters for all of these dogs. All right. So this education and rescue, those are parts of SDR's mission, but we also send a lot of resources to shelters to do spay and neuter programs, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's not as much as I would like, but we do spend several thousand dollars every year supporting spay and neuter programs in the places that we get our dogs from. Most of our dogs come from Arkansas and Texas. And I do feel like it's great that we're rescuing. And my original intention for this was to just rescue dogs, but I have not seen the supply diminish at all. I see tons of rescues starting up, which is amazing. And I'm so thrilled to see that. But we still have, you know, it seems like 100 puppies come up and 100 puppies more get offered. So I'd really like to see major effort to work on some of the spay neuter issues down there.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's all part of the larger pet animal welfare in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's so important.
And pieces of the puzzle. Like how can we solve this so there's less suffering?
Right. Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
So I'm excited for this podcast. We are going to do some really great people that we're going to be interviewing. I think our most exciting is we're going to be interviewing Patricia McConnell. She wrote the book Love Has No Age Limit, which is just a little pamphlet that we require our adopters to read before they adopt. I think it's like $8 to download on Amazon or on Kindle.
So amazing. And, oh my gosh.
So amazing.
Fantastic.
So she'll have a lot of information to help us, you know, transition dogs into this new world that's opening up now. And she also talks a lot about trauma and resiliency and how we can set up our dogs and also understand some of the traumas that they've been through. Some of these dogs have been through a lot. And we're going to be interviewing Jackie Johnson. She's a trainer who specializes in separation anxiety. So many dogs, you know, because they are very social animals, have trouble when all of a sudden you're like, I'm leaving for 4 hours and you're supposed to just sit here inside.
Right.
So Jackie will be really great for that. And then I'm really excited about Amber, who's one of the admins for a group called Pandemic Puppies. on Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah. So she's got a lot of resources for folks who did adopt over the past mm-hmm. year.
Nice. Oh, this is going to be great.
It'll be great. I'm so
really excited.
I'm really excited.
Well, yeah. I just hope that this is helpful to other people who are either working in rescue, maybe fostering, maybe running their own rescues, or people who are people who now own rescue dogs, who have adopted rescue dogs. I just hope that we can help people and their dogs live more harmoniously.
I love that. Yeah, that would be the goal, is mm-hmm. share what we've learned, hopefully have brighter outcomes mm-hmm. for these people who love their dogs and for their amazing dogs.
Yeah. Okay, Emily, so you have been rescuing dogs for years and years and years now. And you and I both know it's hard work. It's endless work. There are always yes. dogs coming up from Texas. Why do you keep doing it?
It is hard, but it's also beautiful. There's, you know, it's one of those yin yang things of like, it's hard work, but mm-hmm. it's great for the dogs. You see a dog who was underweight and had heartworm and limping and about to be euthanized in an impound. And then 6 months later, it is running through the mountains of Colorado with its new dog sibling. And, you know, you've created a human bond where, you know, that dog is the most important thing or one of the most important things in this adopter's life. Mm-hmm. So we're creating families and we're saving lives. So mm-hmm. that is the outcome that keeps us going, I think. Mm. You know, there's a lot of work in between tagging the dog in Texas to get to that part and a mm-hmm. lot of sleepless nights and stress. But in the end, when you know, like we saved that dog's life. And now that dog has just an incredible life. Mm-hmm. I think that's worth it.
I agree. I think that moment when an adopter says, I just can't imagine my life without this dog.
Yeah.
And that's a dog that was on death row 2 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, you've made a connection that is of course it's changed the dog's life, but it's changed human lives too. And, you know, the ripple yeah. effects of putting that goodness out into the world, you never know what's going to yeah. come from that. You're saving the dog's life, but you might be saving more than just that dog.
It's true, that bumper sticker, who rescued who, but
right.
I know for a fact that, you know, we have a private Facebook page for adopters. Mm-hmm. And it's been around so long that now dogs that we rescued 10 years ago mm-hmm. are starting to pass and people are going on and expressing mm-hmm. their sorrow about losing their dog that they adopted from us mm-hmm. 10, 12 years ago. And hearing those stories about like how this mm-hmm. dog changed the trajectory of people's lives and, you know, welcomed children into their homes mm-hmm. and how much they learned. And then I do also like that because we have this mission of humane education, teaching mm-hmm. people how to treat animals. I have to say, I think that extends to their children too. If you, mm. you know, it's like you learn about treating dogs with kindness and gentleness and redirecting, mm. and then you have your child. I think it just makes the world a better place.
Absolutely.
It's not too hokey, but yeah.
I totally agree with you. And I've learned so much about human behavior from learning about dog behavior. You know, and like you said earlier, we're totally different species, but there are similarities. All mammals mm-hmm. learn the same.
you know,
there are some basics there that aren't bound by our differences. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. And now maybe we're getting off on a tangent. I was listening to Brené Brown, back uh-huh. to Brené Brown, and she was talking about love and belonging. And she said, you can't have belonging without love. Mm-hmm. And she said, when you don't have belonging, that is when you start to see like sickness and anger. Mm. And, you know, here in Boulder, we just had the mass shooting. And so we're all just still devastated by that. Yeah, totally. But we know it happens almost every day in this country. And so, you know, giving these dogs a sense of belonging and giving families and children in families a sense that they're part of something bigger, that mm-hmm. they have, you know, a dog in their lives that loves them and they belong. Mm-hmm. I think it can only make things better.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't agree more. Daisy walked into the room and she's leaning up against my leg and just soaking up some chin scratches right now.
Well, one of our podcasts, I do hope that some of our podcasts can go into some of the dog stories.
You know? Yeah, like case studies.
Case studies like Daisy or even Bodie right now we have. Yeah. He just got his x-rays back. You know, one of the sweetest dogs we've ever rescued. This dog is just all heart, 90 pounds of heart. He was dumped on a farm in Texas where people dump dogs that they don't want. And someone came out to shoot all the dogs because that's a version of animal control that they use in that particular town. And Bodie was the only one who ran away and wasn't killed by the shooter. The analogy is kind of, anyway, I didn't think about that until now. Anyway, we knew that there were some issues with Bodie physically when we took him, but everyone said he's just the sweetest dog. So we're like, okay, we can do this. Like we have good supporters who will help us fundraise for medical needs. We just had his dental done, which was pretty intense. He had 3 teeth extracted on Friday and he has 3 more. It was so hard to get them out. He must have lived in a cage and chewed the teeth down to nubs. So yeah, and then we knew he had some hind end issues, so she did x-rays. He has, the list is long. He has a shattered pelvis. He probably got hit by a car when he was younger. It's an old injury, but it's created a situation where his hips, the way they are in the socket, is bone on bone. So he now needs bilateral hip surgery, not replacement. So it's not a huge situation anyway. But he's a really good dog and the vets are encouraging. And they said, if we do this, that he will have quality of life for the years that he has left. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I mean, I was really honest with the vet. I was like, if this is just going to be like years of suffering and, you know, putting him back together to suffer, I'm not into that. But they were like, no, this is a simple surgery. Yeah. We need to redo the hips, get out those last teeth, and he should have like a good quality of life. Good. So yeah. So, you know, just a story like Bodie's, like following him.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay. We're going to have to do a Bodie update every single episode now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Bodie the Black Lab. He's amazing. Oh my gosh.
Well, of course he has many years of life, like good life left in him. My first dog Moose, who I lost in my divorce, he was 8 years old and people still thought that he was a puppy. You know, and he was a big golden mix. And so, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So
Bodie. Sweet Bodie. I am so glad that we're going to help him.
Me too. I know. There's still good in the world. We just have to focus on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So we're excited for people to tune in and follow us. If you're a dog lover, dog rescuer, we are here. We're going to be doing at least twice a month. Hit subscribe.
And we're going to hope to also open up some kind of communication channel so you all can ask us questions and we can like do some Q&As. And, you know, we don't know yet if that's going to be on Patreon or what, but we'll figure it out. And we'll, you know, put links in show notes, wherever show notes go. We're figuring this out as we go along.
It's the Pandemic Podcast. It just took a year to get off the ground.
Thanks for tuning in. If you liked this episode, don't forget to rate and review. It helps other folks like you find the show. To find out more about our programming and adoptable rescue dogs, you can visit summitdogrescue.org. Thanks to Mike Pesci for the original music and to Alex Lee Ammons and For the Love Media for graphics, production, and editing. See you soon on Pod to the Rescue.